Good morning. Welcome. And I'd like to introduce our guest speaker, although guest seems like a strange word to use with Shokin, because he's such a long-time important part of this MZMC's Mahasangha. Shokin Wangkhoff is the founding abbot of Rumanji Zen Monastery in Dorchester, Iowa. In the northeast corner of the state, if you have never been there, I highly recommend it. You should go for session or practice period or whatever you can manage. He was ordained here by Padagiri Roshi, received Dharma transmission here, and we have him back as often as we can. So, welcome. Okay.
Thank you. This is in many ways deja vu, like old home week, but that was probably almost 35 years ago so that I was here, so there's some familiar faces, but they're also old. Not like I remember them. Of course, I haven't changed. You know. Hey, Arnie, how you doing? A lot goes on in human life, a human life. We all go through changes, and there's some things we re-espouse to, certain time and years in our life, and things change, and we go through these tips and valleys, and sometimes people take their lives in some of those dips and valleys, or take out other people. Anyway, it's really great to be here at Zen Center. You know, I came to Zen Center not out of some, you know, dogmatic, you know, attachment to Buddhism, but I needed a place to get, you know, grounded and whatever. So that time it was Saturday mornings. This is Sunday, right? Yeah, okay. Anyway, it was really good. Like I said, that was, you know, over 30 years ago. You know, it's like what was that practice about? If I look back on it, or what is Buddhism actually? I always tell people, Buddhism's not really a denominational religion, as we usually think of. It's even called one of the five world religions. Okay, but what is that religion? So that point, I'd like to get at a little bit this morning, if you kind of bear with me here. There's a chapter in, these are one of the three books that was edited of Katagiri Roshi's lectures that he gave here in 1973. There's a lecture in here called source of existence. And in that lecture, he he treats a koan. Koans, as you know, were these kind of teachings from, you know, early China, and they were teachings out of ordinary life. But they tried to kind of tap on what was the Buddha's so-called enlightenment. Word Buddha, by the way, in Sanskrit means awakened one. Okay? So we all have this potential to wake up. To what? What was the Buddha's enlightenment there? So there have been many sort of koans that kind of try to get back to that. And let me share this one with you, and we'll see if we can kind of just touch it a little bit. It's in this chapter called The Source of Existence, so you can read it sometime. So Kedagiri Roshi said, there was a monk named Tenno. He asked his teacher, Sekito Kisen, what is the meaning of the Buddha's teaching? Okay, that's what we're talking about. What is the core? And Sekito was early Chinese master after the sixth patriarch. Sekito said, what is the meaning of Buddha's teaching? Sekito said, it is unattainable and unknowable. Hang on to that a little bit, because that's a kind of a clue. Okay? And then, so he says, unattainable and unknowable. And Tenno, that monk, says, will you say more? It's unattainable and unknowable. And then he says, well, would you say more? That's pretty good. And then the teacher, Sekito, says, this is his answer. He says, the great sky doesn't bother the function of the white cloud. That's the essence of Buddha's teaching. What does that mean? So, this is the deal. So Kedagiri Roshi says, it's not that the truth or the source, you know, the truth of the Buddha's teaching or truth or the source of existence. It's not that it's unattainable or unknowable. You can touch it a little bit. You know, I was even thinking this morning, we were all sitting together, most of us here, for that morning sitting. And it really felt healing to me. Like, just here. You know, 30 people, just in a room together. Just here. Just being. It was really, you know, a great feeling I had being here. Partially for me too, just coming back, you know, I mean, I used to live across the alley here, you know, and this was really home for me in many ways. But the truth of that is we shared this moment together. We can see this abstract truth that he says is unattainable and unknowable. We can see it a little bit here. Because, you know, just in this 40 minutes that we spent together, you know, I feel, or we could say, I'm a little part of you, you're a big part of me. We shared this moment together. So I grew from that. You can't measure it. You can say, I don't want to make a big deal out of this or romanticize it here. But in a sense, our lives are filled of encounters. Some for the good, some for the not so good. But even the not so good ones, we grow from, and we get the deeper understanding of what we have to dig down and find in ourselves in terms of strength. The Dalai Lama says, you don't understand forbearance until you have to forbear something. You don't learn it from books. So even those so-called negative experiences, it's like those are really opportunities to grow. So all life is we can see this to some degree. All life is interpenetrated and interwoven. I'm thinking just this last 40 minutes of our being together as an example. So in a sense, you could see that all life is, it's in Buddhism, they say all is one. There's even jokes about that. Or hot dog vendors. You heard that joke? No? Where you been? Grew up in Minneapolis? Minnesota Twins? Yeah, hot dog vendors, a guy in the stands, a Buddhist guy and a Christian guy or whatever, a Buddhist guy says, I want one with everything. That's the joke. I'm one with everything. Okay. So everybody knows that, yeah, okay. No, you too. But there's some great wisdom in that hot dog joke, because so Katagiri Roshi, he says, if you think the source of existence is over there someplace and you are here, you're really off. He says, this is dualistic understanding. Like truth is something out there, interwovenness, interwovenness, and you're observing it and I'm teaching or explaining it. He said, this is dualistic understanding. He says, the source of existence is not a thing, not something outside of yourself. He says, although you are never apart from it, if you say, I am one with the source of existence, you will feel a gap. In reality, he says, there is no gap. That source of existence is us. So all life is interpenetrated and interwoven, including me and you. This is my life. I am source of existence. You are also source of existence. The thing is, we each have our own intellectual ability. So we can dichotomize. We can kind of think about what I want or what I like or what's my territory. We can have our ideas about where I want my life to go. But in actuality, those are just ideas. And life, because life has its own pulse, its own source of existence. It's constantly arising and disappearing. It's constantly moving. Our ideas, while it's really a strength that we have, is also just our ideas. It doesn't actually, even though you get insurance, even though, you try to arrange everything so, everything works on schedule and your life is all guaranteed, we try to institutionalize everything so it's all neat and compact. Still, there are tornadoes, like Joplin, Missouri. I don't have a TV, but I know about Joplin, Missouri. I have a computer. I've seen pictures. And I was 3 years in Joplin, Missouri. I grew up Catholic. I went to the seminary right out of grade school. I was ordained. Where'd I go? St. Mary's Parish in Joplin, Missouri. I was associate pastor there from age 25 to 28. And that parish, I looked at some of those pictures and I thought, wow. And sure enough, I just emailed somebody that still lives there. And they said, yeah, St. Mary's was just like bombed. And the only thing that existed was the cross and the steel, kind of a steel infrastructure. It was kind of a little bit of suburb. At first they had a Quonset hut when I was there, and then while I was there, they built this kind of a concrete block, very simple structure, but with steel girders as the infrastructure. So life has its own rhythm. Things happen. And the Buddha's basic teaching, basic purpose, is to say, look at life. The basic teaching about Buddhism is purpose. It's not some ethereal, you know, dogma or something. It's to save you and me, save us from human suffering. And the deepest human suffering is our attachment to self, our attachment to how things should be in the world. There shouldn't be tornadoes. There shouldn't be one third of a city being wiped out, 30%, you know, of Joplin. I like giving you little examples. You know, there shouldn't be. You know, we have a nice monastery in northeast Minnesota. I mean, northeast Iowa. I'm still in Minnesota. You know, but they're straightening out our road. So that means our road's kind of like in the driftless area where, you know, curves and all this. And anyway, straightening out our road means blasting hillsides on either side of our entry road to straighten it out so there's not a curve around and then another curve around, but it's straight. So Thursday, blasting. And the guy outside on our lawn, and we are from here to the concession stand up there on the corner of Lake Calhoun. That's a far way, right? So a guy out there in our lawn with a seismometer or something, so we always measure, you know, how much vibration for, you know, insurance purposes. I said, it's going to go off pretty soon. Yeah, he said, in a few seconds. I said, oh. So I hung on to the little banister there. Sure enough, man, it really shook. And then we start feeling rock dropping down all around us. He went diving for this tree. I went way back against the building underneath the big eave. And sure enough, there was rock all over the yard, you know. It came from the concession stand down here. And that was on the other side of the hill. And I saw all the rock go up in the air. So, and I could hear a thud. So, I thought, man, I looked at our roofs, I couldn't find a hole. So I was putting the tractor away that day. Sure enough, hole in the roof of the barn, this big, with a rock like that, went through. The bumper sticker says, shit happens. Right? So, you know, it happens. You know, you can live in a war-torn area, you know, torn area too. What'd I do? You know, and all of a sudden I'm in the middle of a war-torn country, you know. all kinds of things happen, far beyond what we even want to think about or conceive. Can I be with life as it is? That's the issue. Can I be with life as it is? It doesn't mean I have to like it, you know, or I shouldn't prepare to kind of for things to go a certain way. But life has its own rhythm. The source of existence is just arising and disappearing, far beyond our concept of it. Where is the release? Where is the release of the young man I'm corresponding with, who's 5 years I've been corresponding with him in Clarinda, Iowa? He's doing a life sentence for a crime he committed when he was 18 and crazy then. But he's been in jail longer than he's been out of jail. Where's the release for a person like that? There's very high suicide rate in our prisons. You know, where is the release for people who are incarcerated for years and years and years and years? Can we be one with life as it is? Can you be one with your cancer diagnosis? You know, or whatever. When it's going to be something, right? So, cancer, heart, cars running over your toes. Or more. I can sit here and talk like this, but can any of us be one with life as it is? Where is the release? Just can I stand up in moment as it is, beyond my concept of how it should or shouldn't be? Can I deal with divorce? When divorce is there, can I deal with sickness, my parents, and their death? When that's there, can I be what doesn't mean we like it or we aren't affected by it? I'm not talking about being a stoic, you know, whatever, Zen master. You know, it's like, can you be with what is? Kadigiri Roshi says, no one has equanimity 100% of the time. So equanimity is being really sometime like this and being able to somehow bring it back. So sometimes he said, you know, like 80% is 100%. You know, less 70%, 60%. Anyway, We did Zazen this morning. They say Zazen, if any of you are new, let me just tell you this. They say Zazen is good for nothing. It's good for something. I mean, it helped me a lot, I would say. But on the other hand, if I'm attached to that, I'm trying to get someplace with Zazen, yeah, that's good. Basically, the basic teaching about Zazen is just bring yourself the moment. So in those 40 minutes, when that's what the whole objective is, bring yourself the moment, sit upright, thumb tips touching. So it's a very concentrated kind of way of like bring yourself to moment. That's pretty good. The true Zazen, all the ancestors taught this. True Zazen is 24-hour Zazen. In other words, can I just bring myself to bombs falling out of the sky, going through your tin roof? It's always happening in all of our lives. Can I bring myself to that and just take care, take a breath, instead of throwing something or killing ourselves? That teaching was the Buddha's way. So when he says, when Tennille asks him, First of all, let me just back up one little second. When he says it's unattainable and unknowable, that meaning is because we are also it, and that ultimate source of truth is also us. In a sense, you are already it. So how can you explain something that... I mean, in a sense, we can explain it a little bit. But in another sense, if subject and object are one, you can't explain. In other words, you can't dichotomize or say this is it, because you already are it. That's why he says it's unexplainable and unknowable. We can explain it a little, and it's knowable to some degree, and you can just... But subject, me, and source of existence, it is one, so it's unattainable and unknowable. We're already it. But then Tenno said, okay, maybe I get that, but could you say more? Then he says, the great sky doesn't bother the function of the white cloud. In other words, the great sky means that ultimate source of existence. It doesn't, you know, it manifests itself. It is a white cloud. It's constantly arising and changing and disappearing and appearing and moving. So that ultimate source of existence, it's manifested in every moment of existence. And Kadigiri Roshi says, we should learn to walk stably with majesty in moment to moment of our life and really handle day-to-day existence. That, we use the word loving kindness, you know. In Buddhist circles you hear that word, loving kindness. It's pretty good. I mean, personally it sounds a little soapy, but loving kindness, you know. I mean, it's more than loving kindness. Hello, how are you? And welcome. You know, we should do that. But that loving kindness is, can you walk with stability and majesty? Not stuck up majesty, but stability and majesty with every aspect of your life. Can you do it with your 60s? Can you do it with your 80s? Can you do it with your 90s? When you barely can function, can you stand up there? The abbot of Eiheiji Monastery in Japan, I went 3 years after Kadigiri Roshi died, the year before he died, and then 2 years after that. That abbot, Eiheiji Monastery, which was Dogen's monastery in Japan, when I heard him give a talk, he was 102. And he died at 105. But he is up there, you know, in a wheelchair. But he gave a talk about Zazen. I really remember that. And I heard young monks saying, this abbot would be at Zazen in the morning. You think your life's over in the 90s, right? But just Zazen. What is the inspiration that young monks took from him, just showing up, you know, in his hundreds? I mean, it's kind of rare, I agree, you know. I mean, I hope I... No. But beyond our idea about how long we live. Anyway, can we stand up there, you know, wherever we are? Let me just read just a couple little passages here. Kadigiri Roshi says, the source of existence is all unattainable and unknowable. This means that your life and the world are completely beyond thoughts and ideas. That's what we were saying. It really has its own rhythm. This is a little difficult to understand because human consciousness always separates and dichotomizes, dividing the world into subject and object. Although the source of existence is beyond the function of your consciousness, it's beyond your ideas about things. He says, and although you cannot attain it, nevertheless, it works with you constantly. Strictly speaking, it is every aspect of your mind and each pore of your body. He says it. Existence occurs in time. So when we see it, it's occurring in time. He says, it appears different in each moment. At one point you see a book, in the next moment a cup, in the next moment a hand, but basically book, cup, and hand are all the same. All the source of existence. So even cup is source of existence. Cup, let's say, is made of clay, some cups. Where does clay come from? Clay comes from the earth. Somebody cooked up a handful of clay, made a cup out of it. So a human being is in a cup. It's like earth isn't existence without sun or water. So all universe is really in a cup, actually. But it's true of everything. The whole universe is the same source of existence. He says, you try to know the total picture of human life, but your knowledge is very small. How can the huge universe fit into your small world? It's impossible. Instead, why don't you fit your small world into the huge universe? That one is, can I just be with what's happening? That is putting my small world into the whole universe. It is, in a sense, release, if I can release. Another metaphor, Hojisan Kategori says, instead of trying to scoop up water into your basket, basket is weaved, baskets don't hold water very well, right? So he says, instead of trying to scoop water into your basket, like we try to arrange our life, and it's good. But it's kind of hopeless if you think you can negotiate everything without suffering or some pain in your life. So he said, instead of trying to scoop water in your basket, can you put your basket in the water? So that is, can you be one with moment? That's the gata for getting up in the morning in the monastery. That gata says, waking up this morning, I bow with all beings to embrace everything and to realize everything without distinction, embracing the ten directions. So that realizing everything, that quality is, can I just take care of moment as it is and deal with my life. I'm going on, I realize, but let me just read one more part here. He says, beyond what your senses reveal, your life is intimately connected with all sentient beings. Kategori Roshi is saying this. From moment to moment, you live at the source of existence. So don't be hasty. Make each step stable. Because whatever you do occurs within truth, within Dharma. You should walk as best you can. You have to take care of this moment with stability and majesty. That's where I got that. phrase there. Loving kindness is that. 2 weekends ago, I was giving a talk out in Boulder for Sishin. There is Cliff Clouson also was to be ordained by Kettigir Roshi, but Kettigir Roshi died before he could do it. Cliff was a whole-time member here, took care of bookkeeping. Anyway, I've been going out there every year. Cliff's ordained. And anyway, I'd give Dharma talk. It's a little kind of example. It's a little off color, but I can handle it. Anyway, it was a place where they had yurts for a temple. That's where Sishin was. There were about a dozen people there for that Sishin. I went for break, the bathroom. Bathroom is in an old trailer. Septic system in the old trailer doesn't work very well. So there's a big sign saying, put all paper, including your toilet paper, in one of these flip-top, press the button, you know, with your foot thing. So it was open, put toilet paper in there. So I go to grab a piece of toilet paper, last piece almost. The whole thing pops out. I'm supposed to be in the Zendo in 3 minutes. Okay? So the whole thing pops out of the rack. And not only pops out of the rack, the bar springs open, and the spring pops out, and the spring pops out into the flip top where all the toilet paper's at. You know, and I'm, you know, my impulse is just to leave the whole mess, but I couldn't do that either, you know. So, and then I was, you know, working on my talk, thinking, you know, and actually, I use the same example, walking with stable and with majesty. So there, that was loving kindness. So there, it popped into my head, hey, this is where loving kindness starts, right here. Can I just take care of this situation, you know, with a little stability and majesty, you know. So it was a very good example, actually. So our life is like that, you know, in a lot of situations. Anyway, I have one last quote from Kettigir Roshi. He says, when time, place, and person are dissipated within this very moment, it is called Dharma. If you're new, Dharma is one of those, if you're old too, Dharma is one of those words that you always hear with Buddhism, oh, Dharma. Like, Dharma is something way outside of you. Dharma is source of existence. It is you. How do you function in whole universe? Put yourself in universe. He says, one time, place, and person are dissipated within this very moment. It is called Dharma. At that time, we take good care of Dharma. In other words, where is Dharma? Dharma is really happening moment to moment. Dharma is my giving talk today and just be here and give it. And no idea before talk how talk's going to go. But just give talk. That's the business. Not kind of be, is it good talk, is it bad talk, stay distant from my talk. It just put myself in talk. Yours is you came for 40 minutes. If you're new, you didn't know what you were getting into. You know, but just, you put yourself there. I didn't see anybody walk out. It's very good. It's like, just take care of that situation. That quality is really... Kettigir Roshi says, is really Dharma. When body and mind drops off your ideas about things, we just take care of a moment. Doesn't mean we shouldn't try to change things or work for a better world. You know, it's not passivity we're talking about here. But to change anything, you have to be with the process a little bit. Anyway... That's my 2 cents worth, but it's only 2 cents worth. So we'll see how I handle the rest of the day, you know, or in our next decade. Any comments? Anybody want to say anything? Or? It's always interesting how people get here. It'd be a great book just to go around right now, this room. How did you get here? It's really interesting how each of us got here this morning. Alert, that's universe happening, or whatever, kind of.
Shokan, we knew somebody was going to bring up the toilet paper story, right?
Yeah, okay. No, okay.
You know, but it's love and kindness, and it strikes me that it's also all the other paramitas, probably, and the Brahma Vihara, too, you know, it's generosity. It's wisdom as well. Do you think that they all always arise together?
You know, like they say, if you pick up one, you pick them all up, kind of, you know. But I think it just, we're always picking and choosing where we're going to do that loving kindness and all those things. You know, I'll be loving kindness, you know, when I meet somebody. But when we get met by somebody hitting us in an intersection, you know, can we get loving kindness in those situations, you know, when we're least expected? That's not actually responding to your question exactly, but. So, Bob, you're sitting in the seat that I first sat in when I came here, my very first time, I sat that second seat in from the wall, in from the door. I remember it. I was just going through a lot of stuff. And somebody brought me over, I sat there, and that 40 minutes, you know, I really, like, calmed down. And kind of got a hold of myself a little bit. So that quality, it's very good, you know. Can we just hang on to ourselves as we walk through life? That's sort of Zen Buddhism. It's not a Buddhism that's out there someplace. It's really, you know, like walking stably, you know, with our life. Anyway, that's what I want to just share with you this morning. So thank you.